fire up for pro football.
That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
This is Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad.
Wouldn't kill you. We play some competitive sports once in a while, wouldn't it?
Oh, would that make you love me?
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
So, the microphone... Hey, wait.
There you are.
Why is it working now? Literally nothing has changed. Really? I'm so scared.
Yeah, this is... This show is like... This is Erie, Indiana right now, man. This is crazy.
I don't understand what's happening. I can hear myself. We pressed one button, Jesse. We pressed the OL button under my microphone, and now I can hear myself. So, I think we figured it out.
Well, there you go.
Let me text the engineer who I just left a message on and said, never mind, figured it out.
This is like radio gold. Like, this is the, we've,
so
the system has really, I mean, you're the real MVP. You've given us so much new material through all the week, and not just this show. Like, every single show has mentioned something about, man, this is crazy, and I don't know what's happening right now.
Oh, well, look, there's a lot of scary and different things happening in this studio, and there's new computers, and there's a new microphone. Well, no, the microphones are the same, and they're just disgusting as ever. But there's new, like, headphone jack areas, and there's new ways to put your mic on, and there's a brand new board. And that board has, like, Japanese letters on it because it's kind of broken, and it doesn't make any sense, but it still works. And I pressed one button and figured out how to hear myself. But I was going over the air last segment. We went and checked in the logger, and my microphone was going out over the air. It was me and you who could not hear me.
Yes.
So now I learned another thing with this board that is different is you have to press a button so that we can hear each other. That's really important.
I don't have that button over here. I don't think our side is that important.
No, the button was in the board in the control room.
Okay, good.
I don't have a button either.
Okay.
I just went, well, this has been normally on when we've been on the air, so let me press this and see what happens, and voila, we found it. So for those who are joining us at the normal time, we were on 10 minutes early because the playlist was messed up, so we're here. And we talked about Rashad's car getting broken into, which was not a great story. He got his window busted in. And someone texted in on the Better You Today text line saying that robbers have this, like, I guess for lack of a better term, technology that can detect laptop batteries outside of your door so that they can break your window open and know that there's a laptop in there.
That's crazy.
So I guess the moral of the story is don't leave your laptop in your car ever if you can't help it.
I guess not, man. Or, you know, find a better place, safer place to park, I suppose, which I mean, because really where I parked wasn't a bad part of the, but then again,
there's a little sketch over there.
Yeah, there's a little bit, but I mean, I guess, who knew?
It happens, right?
Just got to fix it, man. Can't really dwell on that at this point.
So if you missed the first segment, Rashad's car was broken into, and we talked about some high school football for like 6 minutes. And now we're here for the actual show. We have Fantasy Scramble at 9:30, like always. So text your fantasy questions to the Better You Today text line at 55305. We also have Hate It or Love It coming up at 10:30 in the second hour. And West Coast Bias is going to be at 10:15 in that hour as well. So we'll talk some college football. We'll talk some NFL. Lots of stuff coming up on the show. But do want to start with Oregon, as per usual. Oh, social media before we go. I'm at Mike Lynch 27 on Twitter. Rashad's at TaylorMade503. Jesse's at Jesse Osman, ASZMAN. Station's at 1080 The Fan. That's where you can find us on Twitter and then text us throughout the show. We love you. The Ducks lost to Utah. The Utah Utes team that lost their starting quarterback and starting running back this week for season-ending injuries, Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss out for the year right before the Oregon game. And Oregon still loses the game 32-25.
Backups, man.
On the road. And I don't really know where to start with this game because it's a massive amount. I'm not even a Duck fan, and it's still a massive amount of disappointment, right? You're kind of reeling. It's been a tough couple of weeks for the Ducks. Yes, you beat UCLA, but it wasn't very pretty. We talked about that last week, that it was just special teams and nothing else for the most part. And you're looking for some sort of a spark on offense to get the offense going again. And you come out so flat against Utah, and you're able to kind of bounce back later in the game, but it's too little too late, and you can't stop a nosebleed from backups. So I don't know where to start with this other than why do I feel like I'm not surprised?
Because I don't really think any of us are at this point. You know, we don't know what this Ducks team is anymore or what their personality is anymore. This is a team that's lost three of their last four games. Three of the last four. 4 weeks ago, there was optimism.
Like college football playoff potential.
Absolutely.
Optimism.
Like, man, you know, they've lost one game and they beat a really good team. Like, maybe this is what they'll need if they can run the rest of the board, because nobody's as good as Washington, right? Like, there isn't one of these teams that should be able to compete with the Ducks, especially after they go out there and beat UW. Wrong. That was incredibly wrong. You know, they turn around and lose in a good game against a good Washington State team, arguably the best team in the Pac-12. You know, and then from there they go on and lose, or they win a game, then they lose another one. It's just, I don't know what to say. And it's not even an Arroyo thing anymore. At first it was just the defense. But now I'm looking at the offense going, I'm not sure what I'm looking at. There's a reason that Justin Herbert is eyeballing Dylan Mitchell all the way down the field. He's his only good receiver. Really, at this point, I would throw it to him every single time too. There's really no other option at this point, man. Justin Herbert, probably, if he goes to the draft this year, if he decides to go, the clear-cut number one pick. I think we all can kind of agree on that. For, you know, the Giants or whomever is picking number one at that point, he's the clear number one pick. And he doesn't have a bevy of weapons to work with right now, man. The run game is suspect, which is rare to say for the Oregon Ducks over the past few years. The defense has been suspect for a long time. You're just looking at a team that's not very good. So I'm at the point now to where a loss to Utah, when I woke up and saw it, it's like, oh, not surprised.
Well, here's the thing, and we've seen this from multiple press conferences from Mario Cristobal, and he desperately wants to create this ground and pound running style out of the pistol that will lead to the passing game for Justin Herbert, right? And I believe it was a couple of losses ago, I can't remember which game specifically, but he said, it might have been the Arizona game, he goes, we have to get a commitment to running the football again. He was very adamant about it. He's like, we have to run the football. Have to. And frankly, I don't think the Ducks have a good enough running game to be able to do that.
No, they don't.
Their offensive line has some injuries, which is obviously key number one. Penei Sewell's out for a while. You had Hansen get suspended for the first half of this game because he was ejected in the UCLA game. So you had a true freshman in who actually left the game with a scary concussion too. And you had a couple other offensive line injuries, and your running backs are, you go into the season and you go, oh, Tony Brooks-James is the starter. Tony Brooks-James has done nothing. He's basically been relegated to a special teams role. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that is. Maybe he's not practicing well. Maybe he's not trying. I don't know. But he's been relegated to special teams duty. He got one carry yesterday. CJ Verdell becomes the number one back. He has a couple of good games. He's been flat. Mm-hmm. Travis Dye is not ready yet. He's had a couple of decent runs here and there. He's gotten a couple of red zone carries. But he's not ready yet. So you're trying to create this offense that has this great power run game, but when that fails, you don't have any idea what to do. And that blows my mind. So you're right. They have basically one and a half good receivers, right? Because I count Jacob Breeland. Justin Herbert likes Breeland as a tight end a lot as a target. But you have one of the best quarterbacks in college football. And if the running game doesn't work, the offense just doesn't play well at all?
And even last year when
that doesn't make sense
when
to
the
me.
Ducks were without Herbert, you still had Royce Freeman, who was still able to carry the offense at least for a while and be able to put up big numbers. There's a reason Herbert goes to Dylan Mitchell. He's the most consistent player on this team. Dylan Mitchell of the, 10 or 11 games they played, he has over 100 yards receiving in at least five of those. Like and three in a row, like these past couple games, he's been killing. There's nothing that you can't do to throw at this young man and he doesn't catch. At this point, man, I wouldn't take my eyes off Mitchell. And that's, you can tell Herbert hasn't. He's staring him down the field. He's waiting for him.
Which is a negative.
Which is a big negative. But I think it speaks more to the lack of depth in for the receiving core for the Ducks right now. You said one and a half good receivers. You know, Jacob Breeland is a good receiver when he's able to be in the game and when he's able to be a big part of the offense. When he's not, he's not a great blocker. You know, he's just, you know, someone who's on the field. And I think that's the case with most of these guys. And also on the defense, they don't get a pass. They clearly don't get a pass. The defense is the reason the Ducks can't stay in most games.
And they had very little pressure on quarterback yesterday. They had one sack from Thomas Graham, who's the corner. So didn't pressure a young redshirt freshman quarterback who had never started. Gave up 232 rushing yards on the ground with 124 of those coming before half. And even with that, you still got back into the lead late in the game and you were up by a couple points and you wound up giving up a late touchdown to lose the game. But so before I go like overly negative with this as well, clearly they were able to get back in the game. Justin Herbert actually had a really good game for the most part. First time in a couple of games for him, 20 for 33, 288 yards, three touchdowns. Once they basically said, okay, Herbert, you got to get us back in this game, he was able to do that. Granted, only to Dylan Mitchell, but he was able to do that. And it's like, well, then do that earlier. Because if he can do that, why aren't you passing? Why do you have to focus so hard? I understand. I'm not an idiot when it comes to football. I understand that you need to run the ball to pass the ball. But if your focus is so heavy on the run game and it's not working, you have to change it up.
You have to.
If you keep repeating the same thing without any good results, it's insanity. Also,
there are only 32 attempts on the ground for all, five guys that decided to run the ball. And that includes 10 carries by Justin Herbert. 32 total carries for the game. Your quarterback can't have the most carries in the game. C.J. Verdell had 11. Herbert had 10. That can't be how you're winning football games. And let's be real, man. Herbert is not Marcus Mariota as far as being elusive and making a couple guys miss. Oh, can he run? Sure, he can move. But are you expecting him to kind of look at the defense and then make a decision and take him? No, absolutely not. So they have to get him some help. And really, at this point, unless he stays for another year, which personally I don't think he's going to, I think you might, just be seeing the last few games of Justin Herbert here in a Ducks jersey.
Honestly, let's break because I disagree with that. Now, I remember we were on the air when this first segment happened, and I was like, why on earth would he stay? And I have completely changed my mind. So I'm going to tell you why next here on Football Sunday on The Fan.
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
Text line, Better You Today text line 55305. Getting plenty of thoughts there. We'll get to that in a second. But Rashad just said he thinks Herbert's gone after this year based on how the performances have been. And to be honest, I used to think the same thing, not because of the performances, but because I just thought, why on earth would you take the risk to get hurt next year and come back when you're about to make $10, $12 million, whatever the case is. But after the last few weeks, we've seen the first warts of the season for Justin Herbert. He's had some horrifically bad games. And it's not just on the offensive play calling. He has been very inaccurate. Yesterday was a good game for him, but he has been very inaccurate, which is, rare for him. And the reason I think he might stay is twofold. One, we've mentioned this already, but his brother is coming to play next year for the Ducks. Patrick Herbert, tight end. Also Sheldon High School. And two is the Ducks are 6-4. So they've got two games left, Arizona State and Oregon State. No matter what you do in that, you're not getting to a great bowl game. Or you're not getting to a bowl game that you wanted to get to if you're Justin Herbert. And maybe you're that kind of guy who just likes college football enough or more and wants to play with your brother, and he stays. Now, if that's the case, I worry a little bit about what might happen with some of your backup quarterbacks that you recruited because, players are quick to transfer if they don't get their shot. But also, you can't really worry about that too much if you're going to get a guy like Justin Herbert back for a year. I still don't know if it's the smartest decision. I still think he gets paid Buco bucks if he goes to the draft this year and gets drafted really high. But the last few weeks, his draft stock has likely taken a little bit of a hit because he hasn't been able to grab his team by the scruff of the neck and lead them necessarily. So because of that, I think he's going to be much more likely to stay than I thought in the first place.
I mean, I could see him wanting to stay. There's a 10% chance that, at least in my opinion, that he decides to stay. you know, I look around at this, you know, the people that are, you know, probably considered to come out of the draft or come out this year, and Herbert's clearly the best quarterback of any of them. And I'm not sure who he's talking to or saying what to him, but what does he have to gain from staying a year? I mean, let's just be real. They're going to get in a bunch of freshmen next year who are going to be good, and, you know, some of them probably electric. But how many of them are really going to help the Ducks get over the hump that is Washington State at this point? We're not even talking UW. How many of those teams are going to help them beat UW and Washington State? And now it looks like teams like Cal are starting to get it figured out with Wilcox down there. Like, this is a different Pac-12. You know, this is a different landscape. And then you've got an offense that it's not the offense of old that's putting up 72 points a game. You know, this is something that, you know, they're lucky to get 38 points in a W for this team. So, I don't know. I think he's going to go play for the Giants, or who else is crappy right now? Like
the Raiders.
The Raiders, you know, either way, those are great, you know, would be a great situation for him. Probably not the Raiders, but for sure the Giants and inheriting an Odell Beckham, at least for the next few years. And that's kind of what they're looking for, man. Here's a guy who's six. They got him listed at 6'6". I don't know if that's the case, but man, 6'4", 6'5", man, 225, man, that's those measurables you can't get over. And then the fact that Herbert is a winner, because even as the Ducks are losing, he's still making sure he puts up certain stats. He's got 25 touchdowns on the season, 6 picks. For as bad as this team has been, for as bad as those receivers have been, that's still this kid's stat line throughout the season. And a Pac-12 it's not great. I'm going to go ahead and be real.
But oh, it's definitely not
the
great.
The one thing we know the Pac-12 does well is quarterbacks. They can produce a lot of NFL quarterbacks, and, I mean, Herbert is he's a prime example.
Right now, it's not great for quarterbacks in the conference either. Herbert is the best, obviously, but Jake Browning has regressed to very, very poor levels. Gardner Minshew and the stash, he's awesome, but he's an air raid quarterback, which has not translated super well in the past to the NFL, although Patrick Mahomes will have something to say about that. And but yeah, I mean, you're right. He's put up great stats, and look, if he goes to the NFL draft, he's going to get drafted in the first round. He's going to, because he has all the intangibles that everyone looks for, right? Mitchell Trubisky got drafted number 2 overall when people went, what?
Who?
Because nobody watched North Carolina play. And it was one of those like, wait, why is this guy getting this high draft pick? Because he was like 6'7" and big, and he had a good arm. Although this year he doesn't have a very good arm. It's strange. But Herbert is similar in that sense, where he's going to get drafted based off that alone high. But if he comes back next year, another year in this offense, because remember, for him, it is a new offense as well, sort of. The pistol is the starting position under Marcus Arroyo and whatnot. So maybe he looks better next year too. And there's a lot of good recruits coming in next year. One of the texts we got at 55305 said, I lost it. It said, oh, Duck fans, keep calm. Still dealing with Helfrich's recruits. Wait for that recruiting class and sit tight. Good things are coming. It's certainly possible, but as many good recruiters as this staff has, and as many good recruits as they have gotten, which they have, best Ducks recruiting class in their history this year, their coaching still needs to be able to coach those players up. Yeah. You can't just look at a school like Texas, which has had great recruiting class after great recruiting class, and only this year after a like 6-year gap is good again. You have to be able to coach the players up as well. And I hope that Arroyo improves to a point where that can happen with play calling, or I hope the Cristobal is aware enough of what is happening to make a change if necessary. And the reason I say that too is because I remember a quote that he said a couple weeks ago where he goes, someone asked him about the iffy offense, and he goes, well, if you look at our rushing yards and our passing yards, we're top 2 and top 3 in the Pac-12. And it's like, yeah, but if you're watching the games, you're looking at terrible play calling every single drive. So stats be damned. First of all, you played the easiest non-conference slate in the history of Earthworld. And second of all, stats don't mean everything. You have to be able to look at the play calling. And lately, it's been iffy. So yeah, and I hope he's aware enough to realize it at the end of the year.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of coaches don't want to be told how to coach. You know, they don't want to be told that, you know, it's not working or whatever. They feel like it's a process. And he's right. You know, Cristobal, there is a process. So we don't know if maybe this is just a matter of not having the dudes that you need on the field. You know, maybe that's a big thing too. You know, I heard last night on the Ducks postgame show with with Fan Man, and I think Joe was here with him. And he's like, sometimes not X's and O's, it's Jimmy's and Joe's. Like, sometimes you just need the right dudes on the field to be able to make plays. You know, we've been really spoiled here in Oregon to be see some really great defensive college players, you know, for the Ducks, man. You've had guys like Deion Jordan that was here for a little bit. You know, you had a Haloti Ngata at a point. Like, you've had people to come through this this program and really kind of, you know, kind of spoil you. Even guys that didn't really make the league or make an impact on the NFL level. What was the corner with the crazy last name, with the long last name?
For the Ducks?
Play for the Ducks.
Ifo Akpriolomu?
Man, phenomenal, you know what I'm saying, on defense.
He also got hurt.
Yeah, and so he was a guy that just, again, one of those names and one of those shutdown corners that the Ducks kind of had at a point. Man, who are those guys? Is it Lamar Winston? You know, is it some of those other guys that are on the, we don't know yet.
Well, they do have a lot of youth on defense, and they're going to get a lot more they're going to get a lot younger on defense with a lot of the recruits coming in who are likely going to play next year. But yeah, like Diamador Lenore is a freshman and he's been playing a lot, and you're seeing just guys like that get impact plays as well. But I don't blame the defense really much. Yeah, they got shredded yesterday on the ground and it wasn't the best game for them. But look, Jim Leavitt's an amazing defensive coordinator. And from what this defense was 2 years ago, if you remember, the improvements have been startling.
Yeah.
So.
And Jim Leavitt's been good everywhere he's been. So.
But Marcus Arroyo hasn't. And that's still is going to be my big concern, is can he become a better offensive coordinator in terms of calling plays? Or do they keep him on the staff because he is a great recruiter and give someone else the keys to the play calling? Or does Arroyo's ego need that to stay on the staff, right?
Yes.
That's the question that needs to be answered moving forward, because I remember after the Stanford game, despite the fact that they lost that game, I had so many questions about Arroyo, but that was a brilliantly called game. Because it was. They were great offensively in that game. And after that, and I guess the Washington game as well, the wheels just went, fell off. And they almost lost the Washington game too if the kicker didn't miss the easy field goal. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at with the Ducks right now. They're 6-4. They lost the game they definitely should not have lost against Utah. Play calling is still an issue. Playing on the road for them is still an issue, which we didn't even get to, but they have not played well on the road. And obviously injuries right now is an issue. And will Justin Herbert stay? That's kind of, after the Utah game, I was like, these are all the questions that popped up into my head, which have been the same all year. But when you lose a game you're not supposed to, when two players go down that are their key players
And I think it's because of all those questions. If I'm Herbert, I'm saying I'm ready to go. That's just kind of how I feel about it. If I'm Herbert at this point, I think I've done all I need to do, you know, here. We're not going to compete for a national championship at this point. I think I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and go to the league, and I think he's going to do it.
And if we do want to go glass half full, if I want to flip the script on this a little bit, remember, this is the first full season for Mario Cristobal as head coach. And when you get a new head coach, regardless of this, of your type of program or your stature as a program, you have to give that coach a couple of years to see their results. And if I can use my own school as an example, Syracuse, now 8-2. Ranked 13th and likely going to go up at least one or two spots, and playing undefeated Notre Dame next week, by the way.
There you go. Giant killers.
Dino Babers, first year as a Syracuse head coach, 4-8. Second year as a Syracuse head coach, 4-8. This year, 8-2. He always said, give me 3 years. And I think that is, I always say this, even though I know if you go to like some of the bigger schools, like Texas will give a guy like 6 months, you know, but it shouldn't matter. Give a guy 3 or 4 years. Oh. And if they're not panning out then they've failed their own recruiting cycle and they have not been able to prove that they can do it. And then you can make the right decision to move on. It's really, really unfair to judge based off 1 year, even though it's easy to do because naturally you're like, hey, I want to talk about why the team isn't playing well.
Well, I mean, and he's the great Nick Saban, but his first couple of years at Alabama weren't awesome. I think he was 7-4 or something like that for his first couple seasons, and then third season national championship, and really never looked back after that. So for all that we say, all that we're talking about as far as the Ducks are concerned.
His first year he was 2-6, and then 12-2.
There you go. You know, You know, so no one's, I don't think anybody thought that he would go 2-6 or 2-12 or whatever he went that first season. But the Ducks, for as bad as we're saying they've been, they have an opportunity to finish the season winning 8 games. And then after that, go into a bowl game and possibly win one more.
And you know what's funny is before the year, isn't that what we all said?
Yeah.
Ducks 6, 7, 8 wins, something like
That's
that.
That's what winning does. So when the Ducks won those games and got put in the top 25 and then they were number 19, it was, okay, back here we come. And this is, and sometimes we have to, gotta chill a little bit. You know?
That's
Christmas
the,
of the moment.
The ebb and the flow of the season, because of how high the Ducks got early, is making this seem worse.
Oh, yeah. And yet and still, they're probably going to win. There's a chance, a very good chance, they finish the season with 9 wins. They go 9-4, and all
well,
of a sudden,
if they win a bowl game.
If they win a bowl game, exactly. So they're going to a bowl game. You need 6 wins to be eligible for that. So their next couple games are against
Arizona State,
which should be, in most cases, should be a win. But Arizona State can shock you.
And so is Utah, and so is Arizona.
Yeah, so should be a win. Oregon State. We don't know. Oregon State can score. Like, can the Ducks keep up with Oregon State? It's a question that
I think if you're a Duck fan, you're saying Oregon State better be a win.
they're saying they better be a win. But if you're Oregon State, you're saying, I think we can beat this Ducks team. Yeah, I don't think Oregon State is afraid of playing against this Oregon Ducks team.
I think
this one.
I think you're right, though, because if you look at it in the small capsule of the season, it doesn't look super great. But if you take the grand view of it, and at the end of the year, the Ducks have a 7 or 8 win season. First year under Cristobal after they've struggled under Helfrich the last few years.
And let's not forget all the controversy last year. You know, is Taggart staying? Is he leaving? Is he going to Florida State?
Taggart, right. You know, I already forget about him because he was here for 1 year and left.
And his team sucks right now.
Yeah,
that's
it's
why
not
you
very
forget
good.
About him.
But give a guy a couple years, and at the end of the day, a 7 or 8 win season still does look pretty good, even if the middle ground was kind of ugly to get there.
Yes.
And even if you could have won 10 games, could have won the Pac-12 North, it's still a good season.
Yes.
And you can't trick yourself into thinking negatively about it if it turns out to be that. Now, if they lose to Arizona State and then they lose to Oregon State and they finish 6-6, then I think you can have some complaints.
Yeah, it's much easier to recruit when you have 8-9 wins on the season.
Right. All right, let's break. Coming up next, it's time for the Fantasy Scramble. So if you have fantasy football start sit questions, text them in now to the Better You Today text line at 55305. We'll get to as many as we can before the game start at 10. That's next, but first, Jesse at SportsCenter.
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
It is time for your fantasy scramble here on Football Sunday.
So just before we start, can I just say something, if you don't mind?
Yes.
So beginning of the season, I thought I was being super smart in my draft. So first, my first pick was Le'Veon Bell. Didn't think he was going to hold out that long. Turns out it doesn't look like he's coming back this season. But then one of my last picks of the draft was Dez Bryant. I knew that Dez was going to get signed by somebody. It was a matter of time. And I'll be damned if in the first 3 days of him being on that dang team, he didn't tear his Achilles. Now, man, hopefully he recovers and he's able to play. But I think that might be it for Dez Bryant, you know, as far as playing
too.
In the NFL, like that, which sucks because I'm not one of those people that was as down on him as other people thought he was there. But that kind of sucks for me. I'm still in second place in my fantasy league. That's good. But, you know, I thought these were going to be those guys that came in and saved my season and put up big numbers. But I guess, man.
Well, this week, the one note I have about this week is I tried to make some trades this week. It didn't work out. I am playing 5 Philadelphia Eagles on my team this week. And they play on Sunday Night Football. So almost my entire fantasy football team I cannot watch on Red Zone today. I have Carson Wentz. I have Golden Tate. I have Zach Ertz. I'm streaming the Eagles defense this week because the Vikings are on bye. And because Phillip Lindsay's on bye, I am stuck playing Corey Clement as my second running back, which, you know, maybe he gets a touchdown and I get lucky. But 5 players on one team. I guess it could be worse. It could be 5 players on the Raiders. Mm-hmm. At least it's the Eagles. But I don't like that. I don't like that I'm starting five players from one team. It makes me uncomfortable.
I don't like that I'm starting Allen Hurns. And I also don't like that I have to start Evan Engram in my flex position. You know, that's how the waivers are looking right now. There's not a lot of options right now in our league. So it's
one of those weeks.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the questions before we run out of too much time. Flex spot PPR, Aaron Jones, Calvin Ridley, Golden Tate. If I'm going to go in order, I'm going to go Jones, Tate, Ridley. Jones is now the surefire starter in Green Bay, finally. It's taken him the entire season to get there after the couple-game suspension. And he played well the last 2 weeks, and now he's playing a Miami defense, which is not very good. So he's number one option for me. He's also a running back, which gives you a fairly safe floor. Number two is Golden Tate. I'm not sure about how his role is going to look in Philadelphia. He's got Zach Ertz to contend with, who gets a lot of targets from the slot, but I still think he'll be helpful to them and we'll be able to get a couple of catches. And since it's PPR, that's good. Calvin Ridley's gotten less and less looks as the weeks have gone on. He's really, really touchdown dependent. So he's third for me. So I'll go Aaron Jones for you.
I like Golden Tate. I like the fact that I think he's going to get a lot of targets just because he's the new guy and because the one thing that Philly kind of needed was a game breaker at certain points, man. Golden Tate is somebody who can catch the ball in space and kind of make some things happen for the team. So I like Golden Tate. I think Zach Ertz, you know the ball is going to go to Zach Ertz. He's the security blanket like most tight ends are for the quarterback. So I think Golden Tate would be my play today.
I think Ridley, Jones, Tate.
I can't hear you, Jesse.
You can't hear this?
Nope.
Well. How about that?
Yes.
There we go.
I had to press the OL button.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right? I figured it out. We're on the ball. I would say so go back to this. Everybody can hear this again. I would go Ridley, Jones, Tate. I'm not sure if I buy into the Jones is the surefire starter there. I think he's still going to share some carries. He might be. I'm going to say he'd probably get 66% of the carries, but I don't trust Mike McCarthy. I don't trust the run game there. It is a good matchup, so I think he's going to have a good day. But I don't know. Ridley's just scoring touchdowns left and right as well. So Ridley, Jones, then Tate.
Drew Brees or Carson Wentz? This one's easy for me. Drew Brees. I just looked it up. The Bengals have the worst defense against the pass since week 6. And Drew Brees is good at passing the football. So I'm going to go ahead and say Drew Brees.
Drew Brees.
Drew Brees. Didn't need Dez Bryant before. I don't know why he needs him now.
Non-PPR need two. Alshon Jeffrey, Doug Baldwin, Mark Ingram, Matt Breida. Definitely Breida. And frankly, Ingram. I'm going to go Breida Ingram in that one. I don't trust Doug Baldwin as far as I can throw him. And Alshon Jeffrey is certainly a decent option, but non-PPR, I'm going to go the two running backs.
Yeah, Ingram, Breida.
Yeah, Ingram, Breida.
George Kittle or Leonard Fournette in the flex? Well, Fournette is healthy and does not have an injury designation, and I read earlier this week that the Jaguars are going to go, quote, full bore if Fournette is healthy enough to play. So he's your flex. He's going to get all the carries. Don't trust Yeldon. Don't trust Hyde. It's going to be Fournette. Go pick Fournette in your flex.
Fournette.
Half point PPR, Taylor Gabriel or Austin Eckler. Please keep in mind I have Rivers and Tarik Cohen, and my opponent has Trubisky. That's a really tough one. Gabriel has been really inconsistent this year, but in a PPR league, he's decent because he does get a lot of short-term catches. Eckler is so dependent on catching the football on third downs for them, and he loses so many of those to Melvin Gordon, who is fully healthy again, that I'm still probably going to say Taylor Gabriel just because it feels like a safer play. But normally in this situation, I would go the running back that can catch the football, but I just don't. Gordon is the third every down back except for the occasional spell. So it's tough to start Eckler this week, I think. So I'll go Gabriel.
I think I like Taylor Gabriel as well.
Yeah, tough matchup for Eckler. These are both boom bust potentials. I guess I'll just go with Gabriel as well. I think they both have about the same upside and the same bust side. So,
This text says I've already got
upside and bust side.
Yeah,
I like
bust
it.
Side. Yeah, I like bust sides. So this text says I have Duke Johnson already in at the flex, but with Marquez Valdes-Scantling, so for those who don't know, that is a receiver for the Packers, be a better option? Man, that's tough because I don't really trust Duke Johnson. And as much as he should be getting more play in that Browns offense, he's had one good game, and it was last week where he got two touchdown catches. So they're using him, which is nice. And remember, they fired their offensive coordinator in their first game with the new offensive coordinator. He uses Duke Johnson, so maybe that's a good sign. The three named Packers receiver only gets two or three catches a game, but they're usually pretty deep balls. I'm going to go Duke Johnson on this one, but if you kind of need an explosion play, as Jesse likes to say, if you need to score a lot of points, maybe the Packers receiver is your option there.
I'm going to go with Duke Johnson as well. You know, I think the Browns are...
Notice I keep forgetting his name.
Yeah.
Valdes-Scantling.
Yeah. MVS.
I don't know. What number is Valdes-Scantling?
I don't know. I'm going to guess 80-something.
Yeah. I'm gonna say eight. Well, I mean, he's a receiver, so he could be like number 7 or something stupid. Like
well, that. Usually the receivers are either in the teens
yeah,
or the 80s.
So he's like number 11 or 19.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think Duke Johnson. I like how they committed to the run, try to help out their quarterback a little bit. So Duke Johnson, at least last week they did.
Well, with the change of the coaching regime, they're going to use, I think, Duke Johnson a little bit more out of the backfield the way they did last year. He was the leading receiver for Cleveland, and as you know, he's been left in the dust this year under Hugh Jackson. Well, that's gone, and we've seen what's happened, and they're trying to do things that are a little bit more helpful for Baker Mayfield. That's dump off passes to the running back at times. And then you think about how Atlanta is one of the most generous teams to receiving backs in the league. And you're going, this is a really good situation for Duke Johnson this week. I think this is a really good situation in general because I think MVS is going to have a lot of value. But at the same time, I think Duke Johnson has a great matchup, and things are really turning around. He's got RB2 potential down the stretch.
Now, this will be the last one before break. It was probably a dumb question, but Deion Lewis or Jordan Howard, full point PPR at the flex?
It's not
a dumb question because it's really tough. So PPR makes me go Deion Lewis, but Jordan Howard is facing the Lions, who have the worst run defense in the NFL. And Jordan Howard, who hasn't gone over 50 scrimmage yards in the last couple of games, doesn't matter for fantasy points because he still scores touchdowns. He got two last week. I think I'm going to lean Deion Lewis here because of the PPR aspect. And if you saw, they used Deion Lewis quite a bit last week. Part of getting Marcus Mariota going as a quarterback is allowing him to use the dump offs and the short passes like he used to use at Oregon. And Deion Lewis is the king of that. And also Derrick Henry continues to suck. So Deion Lewis will continue to get more run. And I'm going to say Lewis, but it is a much tougher question than I think you're letting on.
So I have Jordan Howard as well, but if I had Deion Lewis in this situation, I'd probably go with him. Like Lynch just said, man, he's the king of really catching balls out of the backfield, man. I don't think anybody really does it as well. Well, there are some that do it as well, but he is one of the best as far as doing that. He was able to make a career out of it in New England, and Mariota kind of knows that, so I would go ahead and say Deion Lewis for the day.
It just seems the tide has finally turned towards Lewis in Tennessee. And I just think right today he is the play. The problem with Howard is he's got a great matchup, but his touches have been inconsistent. His yards per attempt are the worst of his career thus far. And you're really banking that he's going to fall into the end zone at least once, hoping for twice. Deion Lewis in the full point PPR, he's catching balls. He's making up for all those things that maybe a Jordan Howard does. But I think Deion Lewis does all of those things and then maybe even more. So, Lewis.
And then same guy, so I'll finish this text and then we'll go to break. Matt Ryan or Phillip Rivers at quarterback this week? Rivers against the Raiders, Ryan against the Browns, both good matchups. The reason I'm going to pick Matt Ryan is solely because the running game for the Chargers in a game against Oakland will be good enough, I think, that'll limit Rivers' opportunities to have an explosive play or two, whereas I think Ryan is still reliant on the passing game, and the Falcons are still reliant on the passing game more than the Chargers. So I'll say Matt Ryan.
I don't know if you can really go wrong in either one of these cases. Like, Matt Ryan is great. I think he'll be good against this Cleveland defense. Oakland is awful right now, and Rivers can shred up that, you know, they have no corners. It's basically Swiss cheese right now. So I think I'm going to go Rivers. I think I'm going Philip Rivers. I'm going with of the better quarterbacks right now, man, Philip Rivers is the better one. So I'm going Philip.
Matt Ryan or Philip Rivers, huh? Ryan on the road in Cleveland. It's actually pretty good defense. However, this Cleveland defense, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's kind of taken a downturn the last two or three weeks. At the same time, Matt Ryan started off slow. I don't know if you guys remember that week one and him overthrowing Julio Jones in the end zone time and time again. But all of a sudden, he's better than MVP Matt Ryan. I think I'll throw Matt Ryan in there, despite the fact that obviously Philip Rivers is doing what Philip Rivers does. He's not getting a lot of passing attempts, and that is something that Ryan keeps getting is a ton of attempts. So I will once again go with Ryan.
All right, let's break. Coming up next, we'll wrap up your fantasy questions. Keep texting them in to the Better You Today text line 55305. We'll get to them next, as many as we can. This is Football Sunday on The Fan.
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
All right, let's keep going with the fantasy scramble here on Football Sunday. We're bringing you up till 11 o'clock. Lots of NFL talk coming up in hour number two, including West Coast Bias and Hater Love It at 10:15 and 10:30. But the next question that we had, non-PPR flex, Jordan Howard or Jarvis Landry? Because it's non-PPR, I will take Jordan Howard.
I will also take Jordan Howard. Jesse will also take Jordan Howard.
Sorry. What was that again?
Jordan Howard or Jarvis Landry, non-PPR flex.
Oh, man. This is the funny thing about this. I hated Landry the whole time he was in Miami. Now, granted, I don't play in a lot of PPR format, so I just thought he was, you know, quarter point PPR. He's kind of useful, but he's not this amazing guy from LSU that's supposed to be, you know, as great as he is. So he goes to Cleveland, and I'm like, oh, I love this. I think this is going to be great. They're going to have him run more routes. This guy sucks in Cleveland. So I agree. Yes, Jordan Howard, you spoke correctly for me there, Rashad. Landry just not living up to what he needs.
Philip Rivers or Andrew Luck?
Ooh.
Well, Luck is playing Jacksonville, and I know the Jacksonville defense hasn't been as electric this year, but I'm going to go Philip Rivers because the matchup is much better against the Raiders.
Philip Rivers.
I will also go Philip Rivers. A great matchup there in comparison anyway.
So funny enough, I'm just looking at the rankings on ESPN right here. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Brandon Cooks are 10, 11, and 12 in the wide receiver rankings this year or this week. And this guy is asking Brandon Cooks or Cooper Kupp. I mean, look, dude, whoever you want, pick them, because the chances are they're all going to get about the same targets and about the same yards, and it just depends on if they get the touchdowns or not, because that offense is so even that I kind of feel like you can't go wrong. Cooks has the more big play potential, I suppose. Kupp maybe a little bit more steady, so maybe I'll go Kupp on this one, but honestly, pick who you like. You'll probably get a good game from either of them.
You really could. I'm going to go.
Or play both if you can.
Yeah, I'm curious who your other receivers are, if these are who you have to choose from. But Kupp.
Give me some Kupp.
Yeah, Kupp.
Love me some Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, no, I he's been doing great out of the slot. I think you saw a big difference in that passing game with him out 2.5 weeks. They seemed a little bit more vulnerable without that safety net for Jared Goff. So I and then at the same time, you didn't see that offense really going until they got Kupp involved last week in New Orleans. So I just, yeah, Kupp's just something that helps that engine move.
This guy says he has Matt Ryan at quarterback. So in the flex, Josh Gordon or Tevin Coleman? Honestly, I'm going to go Josh Gordon. I think Josh Gordon is about ready to pop on New England. I think he's going to have a huge week this week and is going to continue to have a huge season from this point on. I think Coleman is a good option, but Josh Gordon is my pick.
Josh Gordon is the one Patriot outside of Gronkowski when he's healthy, you know, is going to get the ball, and Brady's going to target him. Yes, Josh Gordon for sure.
Yeah, I'll roll Josh Gordon out there as well. He's definitely acclimating to that New England team very well.
This one says start three, James White, Josh Gordon, Brandon Cooks. You name three players. Start those three. I have Golden Tate and Sony Michel and Oakland's, or Sony, I always say Sony. Sony Michel and Jared Cook need to play two PPR league. Which two do I start? It's Sony Michel and Golden Tate. That's easy for me. Jared Cook has been good in that offense, but Tate and Sony.
Mm-hmm. I concur with Lynch.
Sweep it.
Non-PPR, start two wide receivers. Calvin Ridley, DeSean Jackson, Amari Cooper, Doug Baldwin. Don't start Baldwin. I just don't trust him right now. I guess Ridley will be an easy start for me. I like DeSean Jackson this week, but in a non-PPR league, it's a bit of a risk for him. So I'm going to go Cooper, who did get a lot of targets for the Cowboys last week.
I don't see this text. Where is it?
It's right there. I don't know.
Oh, that one. Who are they again?
Calvin Ridley, DeSean Jackson, Amari Cooper, Doug Baldwin, pick two.
Amari Cooper. You said Calvin Ridley was the other one?
Yep.
Ridley.
Ridley, if you need the Hail Mary Jackson, if you want something that probably is going to be a little more steady, I agree with Lynch. I think Cooper's going to get the targets, a few more targets. He'll be a little bit more consistent. So Hail Mary Jackson, if you just think you're going to be in this, I'd go Cooper.
Is the Giants-Niners game happening? Have you been reporting that?
That one is up in the air. As of right now, it's happening. They have a 24-hour notice, basically, to let you know if it's going to happen or if it's going to be delayed or moved or whatever. So we will know by tonight.
Well, yeah,
but
so
that's
this person,
not helpful now.
Yeah, this person said, I have Barkley. Is he playing? I've never had a player out for a wildfire. I don't know.
I mean, you have to play him. You have to,
unfortunately,
right?
Unfortunately, yeah.
And that is unfortunate, but I guarantee you don't have anybody worth a damn to put in Barkley's place.
Brady or Breeze at quarterback. Once again, we'll go Drew Breeze on this one.
Tom Brady.
Brady.
Ooh, okay. Okay, how much? We got 4 minutes left. Let's go through these as fast as we can. That one we already did. Non-PPR, Ben Watson or Austin Hooper for tight end. I like Ben Watson. He had a really good week last week, and I know he's kind of inconsistent with targets there in the Saints offense, but I like Ben Watson on this one.
I like Ben Watson because I have to start Austin Hooper. I'm sending good juju your way if you do decide to start him, but probably Ben Watson.
Ben Watson or who?
Austin Hooper.
Jeez.
Non-PPR.
Watson. I don't trust Hooper.
Yeah, basically, you have a terrible...
I think Hooper's got a lot more upside, so I'll throw out this again. If you need a Hail Mary, I think Hooper. If you need somebody who's probably going to be a little bit more, probably a better floor than Watson.
Non-PPR, start to Edelman, Josh Gordon, LeSean McCoy. Definitely Josh Gordon. I guess Edelman. I don't like LeSean McCoy at all.
Nope.
So I'm going to go Edelman and Gordon.
Gordon, Edelman.
Yeah, give me some Gordon and Edelman as well.
Russell Wilson or Mitchell Trubisky? Mitchell. Trubisky, who are the... He's playing the Lions, and Wilson's playing the Chargers. Yeah, I'll go Trubisky on this one.
Trubisky.
I'll actually go Russell Wilson. I think he's going to have to put up a few touchdowns to keep up with the Rams.
IF Breida and Barkley, are they playing this week? Hopefully. We just talked about that. PPR, Adrian Peterson versus Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb.
That offensive line in Washington's a mess.
David Njoku versus Trey Burton. Burton.
Njoku.
I got the same thing. Burton's a touchdown or bust, basically.
All right, quickly, we got a couple left. PPR league, flex, LeGarrette Blount, Corey Clement. Oh, God. I'll go...
No Elijah McGuire out on that waiver wire. Come on now.
I'm going to go Blount for the touchdown chance, I guess.
Blount.
I'm going to go Corey Clement.
And I'm starting Clement, so.
I'm going to go Corey Clement. Just there's been not a single running back to score a touchdown against the rushing defense of Chicago.
Fournette, Edelman, flex PPR, or Fournette?
Fournette.
Fortnite.
And Mike Ingram or Mike Davis? Ingram. Mark Ingram, I mean, sorry.
Ingram.
Davis.
All right, that's it. We got it in 230 seconds before the game start kicking off. I'll switch over to Red Zone on the TV. And I'm going to switch over to HSN, apparently. Hmm. What are they selling? They're selling some TVs right now.
I want it.
Next week, we'll have it again, 9:30. We do this every single week, so text your fantasy start sick questions, and we'll answer them 9:30 to 9:45. Hopefully, we help you as much as we can, and you can get to a good winning week. Coming up next, lots of NFL talk here on Football Sunday on The Fan.